In the Great Hall of the Justice League, there are assembled the world's four greatest heroes, created from the cosmic legends of the universe. Superman, Wonder Woman, Batman, Aquaman, and those three junior super friends, Wendy, Marvin, and Wonder Dog. Their mission, to fight injustice, to right that which is wrong, and to serve all mankind.
Hello, and welcome to another exciting episode of For All Mankind, a Super Friends podcast. For All Mankind is a read-through show covering DC Comics' classic Super Friends series, which ran for 47 issues from 1976 to 1981. Proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network, I'm your host, Rob Kelly, and joining me this episode is my super friend, Gabriel Hardman. Hi, Gabriel.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I'm very excited to have you on. This is, as everyone knows, the final issue of Super Friends. This is the last one. It is not the final episode of this series, but it is the final issue of the book. And it's been a long time coming. It's been 4 years, in fact. So I'm really excited to talk about this comic. But before we get to any of that, I want to find out, Gabriel, like, do you have any history with the Super Friends comic at all?
Not really. No, like, I certainly have a history with the Super Friends TV show, but I think this kind of came at a weird place for me because I didn't start reading comics until late 1983, early 84.
And just missed it.
I just missed it. Like, you know, it was, there's an element to this book that I was aware of from later stuff, but could never quite figure out where it came from. But like the international heroes. Mm-hmm. I had never actually read the book.
So is this one that you've read, number 47? Is this, backtrack.
It's not the first one I read because I've gone back and done some research because I take this stuff seriously.
That's right. I appreciate you coming prepared. In fact, yeah, you were, well, they're kind of curious because this episode, this issue, even though it is the last Super Friends, is, I would argue, a backdoor pilot for a Green Fury series.
Yes.
That never came along. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. But you asked me to send you some of all the Green Fury appearances in Super Friends to this point. So were you, I guess your familiarity with the character is just from her current incarnation on Justice League and all the various media she's been in.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, the way that I, like, the thing that sparked a memory about this stuff for me, though, was actually the DC Comics Who's Who from the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like a big two-page spread of the Global Guardians.
Right, right.
That was something that, that was something I just kind of puzzled over when I first got, you know, when I was first reading Who's Who, like, where are these characters? Like, where's this stuff come from? Like, cause it seems like this big team of, like, you know, now maybe a little bit, you know, uncomfortably framed, international characters, they always seemed like a puzzle to me. So like, seeing that it was from Super Friends was, pretty interesting. I mean, cause it doesn't, I mean, can you tell me how in continuity is Super Friends? I mean, like how, I mean, I guess DC Comics barely had a continuity in the 70s and 80s. So
yeah, the river kind of ran in wonder. Well, it sort of ran in both directions, actually, just as I'm saying that, because all these Global Guardians characters that were creations of E. Nelson Bridwell got parted over to the main DC universe. And then you had characters from the DC universe appear in Super Friends, Flash and Hawkman and some of the villains and things like that. So, but they were definitely their own separate continuity. You just mentioned Who's Who, the Wonder Twins or Wendy and Marvin. They never got Who's Who pages.
That's true. Oh, you know? Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So it was DC kind of just was like, this is its own sort of thing. It's not connected to anything else, but yet it kind of blends over. And you know, we've said this on the show many times before. Ian B was a solid company man. He was a writer, but he was also an employee of DC, and he wanted to give his company characters that they could do a lot of things with. And as I mentioned earlier, this, he definitely played favorites when it came to Green Fury, because she guest appears in more issues than any of the other Global Guardians. She's almost a de facto sixth member of the team without being official. And this issue, as I already mentioned, is the final issue. There is no indication from Ian B himself that he knows this is the last issue, except for the fact that for the last 2 years, they've been doing backups. And for this final issue, it's all Super Friends. It's just Super Friends, which now we'll talk about the letters page when we get to the end of the book. That's from Barbara Zakas, who was the editor. But Ian B, I feel like that this was his way of sort of acknowledging this is, I want to give the Super Friends a whole story to themselves since I know this is the last issue. That's it. Right. He still gives Green Fury the bulk of the
the main character of the issue. Yeah. On his Wikipedia page, Bridwell is referred to as the self-appointed continuity cop of DC Comics. Mm-hmm. And I read that and felt like, oh, it's that guy. that's the guy that, like, you know, I mean, look, I'm more than happy to respect this stuff. I've written, you know, I actually kind of try to avoid writing in continuity superhero books, but I have. And I just always feel like, oh, there's a guy like that out there who's going to yell at me about something, you know, I mean, clearly he had a passion for this international hero idea. And I did, you know, and I went back and read, issues, in fact, one that was, that's the one that's referenced in the letter page as well with several international heroes.
Yeah.
It's cool that he had his thing, and like he was, you know, he was trying to, you know, trying to create new stuff.
Absolutely. And we've got the Seraph, the character from the Global Guardians who got three backups and Super Friends. We've been going on and on about them because they're really good. Those backup stories, Seraph is one of the characters that nobody really has done a lot with since the Super Friends. He's appeared here and there, but I mean, like, to me, that was like somebody, oh, this is gold. And they, you know, it's just sort of left behind. So Ian B, you know, I'm sure he was like, hey, everybody do stuff with these characters. And as we know, it's a Green Fury, later Flame, later Fire, become quite the big deal. And even on this cover, which we're going to talk about right at the beginning here, she's the dominant figure on this cover. So what do you think of this cover to number 47?
I think it's all right. I mean, I think that I suppose it's telling the story. She certainly is the dominant figure, but the but I'm not sure that we're getting the level of menace that we could out of these you know, these swampy guys in the background. And and I feel like maybe there's a little bit more dynamic way to do it. Honestly, I would flip the composition of this cover no matter what, though. Put the antagonist guy on the right, have the characters coming in from the left down to the bottom right, so that, like, it, you know, because just in the way you read this, you look at it and your eyes push towards the left, which is not the direction you open the comic with. That's my aesthetic, or at least my storytelling take on the cover, because because you want, you know, you want it to feel like it's flowing in a direction that's pleasing, not which is left or right, and then that's you're opening the book, as opposed to this kind of thing where we're looking down into the left corner.
Gotcha. I mean, I think it's fine. I mean, I don't mean to knock Kurt Schaffenberger, because he's Kurt Schaffenberger. What the hell do I know? I do take, there are demerits for no Aquaman. That's always my bugaboo, is that Aquaman is always, if you're going to eliminate a character because you have too many people on your cover, Aquaman's always the first one that they remove. And since this is the last issue, I'm a little like, oh, come on.
And honestly, I mean, well, it does not feel like they had any idea that Kurt Schaffenberger had any idea this was the last issue, right?
No,
I mean, this is just, you know, tell them a little story of this issue. It feels like if it was, if they knew it was a last issue, we'd have a big, nice shot of all these characters.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. So, but so anyway, okay. So the story is called The Demons from the Green Hell. By the way, I feel like that's another indication that Ian B. knew his last issue, because he actually has a curse word in a kids comic. Yeah, I've never heard the word hell in Super Friends to this point. It's drawn by Romeo Tango and Vince Coletta, our regular artistic creative team. It went on sale May 21st, 1981. So let's get into the plot here. The Super Friends are throwing a birthday party for Zan and Jaina when the festivities are interrupted by a message on the trouble alert. It's Green Fury, who says she needs help from the Super Friends immediately. The team heads for Brazil, and Green Fury tells them that to fully explain what's happening, she needs to reveal to them all what her real name is and how she got her powers. When she tells the team that she is Beatriz da Costa, a shocked Batman reveals that he is secretly her boss, Bruce Wayne. Yeah, Beatriz explains.
He's not exactly the world's greatest detective.
We couldn't figure this out.
They've been hanging out together in Gotham City. No idea.
Yeah. Beatrice explains her father was a surveyor stationed in a remote part of the Brazilian jungle nicknamed the Green Hell. Along with him was his wife, who was pregnant with Beatrice. As Beatrice was being born, a shaman from a nearby village tells her parents that the spirits have chosen the baby to have amazing powers. As Beatrice grows into a teen, she learned that this prophecy was true and developed her powers as she became the superhero Green Fury. Recently, the shaman, who has been guiding Green Fury all these years, has told her he is about to die and to be replaced by his grandson. Unfortunately, the grandson is immature and not in full control of his abilities. He despises all other non-Brazilians who have encroached on his people's territory. Can't really blame him there. And is communing with evil spirits to fight them. The elder shaman is afraid of what his grandson might unleash. That's exactly what happens as various threats spring up around the Green Hell. Green Fury fights the shaman and a huge beast that is a combination of many forest creatures. Aquaman and Zan head to the Amazon River to stop the shaman from displacing the water and flooding a nearby populated area. They are successful, ending with Zan freezing the shaman into a block of ice. Batman, Robin, and Jaina stop a rampaging group of creatures that date from long ago in Earth's past, who were merely fossils moments earlier. Meanwhile, Superman, Wonder Woman, and Green Fury fight off an army of sentient plant creatures. The Super Friends regroup back in the village, and Zan unfreezes the shaman, who immediately threatens them all. Green Fury uses her dazzle powers to show the young man what the world looks like through his grandfather's eyes, who is lying on his deathbed. Seeing the error of his ways, the young man apologizes to his grandfather for the chaos he has caused, finally realizing that there is good and bad in all people. As he dies, the elderly shaman feels at peace now that his grandson and daughter in spirit, Green Fury, will use their powers for the good of all. All right, Gabriel, as your introduction to the Super Friends comic, I mean, what did you think of this story?
Well, for one thing, I think that we're following around the villains of this story. Like, I think that I'm on the side of the villain in this story. I think this is 100% a time when, you know, when, like, if this guy had stepped in with his, half taper, half, whatever, monsters and stuff, maybe the rainforest in the Amazon would be in a better place right now. You know, I mean, like, I don't think that the, I don't think the Super Friends did the future any favors with this.
You can't, you got to judge a story, a piece of entertainment from the time it was made.
That is absolutely true. I'm just saying retrospectively.
That line,
maybe did a disservice to the world.
Yeah.
Right.
That line where he says, I don't like the people that are encroaching on our lands. I'm like, yeah.
Well, it's pretty reasonable, you know, like, I do think that this is, I mean, it's still intended to be a kind of, I don't know what. I mean, I don't know if it's valuing the environmental aspects of this, or if it's, I guess just in a basic way, we should all get along type of story. You should see the good and bad and everybody, but I don't know if the main story it's serving, works as well. I did think that it's like, it felt more imaginative in certain ways, like that chimera type creature, the prehistoric beasts brought back by magic, the swamp creatures and all that stuff. I mean, they're, you know, I get the sense that they all, you know, much like in the show, like they all split up and go off in different directions all the time. And so the, so having, but I think there was, you know, there was, I felt like there was a, there was sort of author intent behind this, you know, like he's out to like tell, you know, to talk about these ancient creatures and stuff. I guess he had an encyclopedia, right? I'm assuming like close by, because there's a lot of talk about specific, you know, Ice Age mammals and dinosaurs and stuff. And actually my favorite thing in the comic was how, Janna says that she studies animals, like she knows all about these animals because she studies them, because she turns into animals. It like makes loads of sense, you know. Of course she's gonna like you know, like just, she's not just gonna be a magic encyclopedia of a million different animals. She's got to put the work in order to use her power. I liked that part.
Yeah, that's been an ongoing bit, is that Janna and Zan are being trained by the Super Friends and they're learning stuff about life on Earth and things like that. Right, so yeah, right. E&B did the work when it came to that kind of stuff.
But yeah, a lot of, I mean, obviously written towards kids with, you know, with explaining who all, what all of the animals were and everything. But I think that, but weirdly also doing a much better job at that than, because I checked up on these animals and, doing a much better job than a lot of kind of lazy, you know, like better than you'd think for a Super Friends comic, and better than probably a lot of mainstream comics at the time.
Yeah, like I said, he really did put a lot of effort into these things, sort of getting the research of it right. He's talking about, he's got, you know, these Portuguese terms and things like that. I mean, if we want to be like, let's say, you know, optimistic, or at least looking on the, you know, glass half full kind of thing, we could see that E&B is trying to say, well, this kid, he doesn't know what he's unleashing. Like his intentions are right, but he's sort of dealing with dark arts, which is going to get completely out of control and end up hurting people that he even doesn't want to hurt. So that's why this kid needs to be reined in a little bit, is because he's sort of dabbling in the dark arts.
Like, okay, his dark arts are fun, though. You know,
like, they are.
I like, you know, I mean, I think that it's, I don't blame him. I don't blame him for that either. when it goes to her, her origin, when she's telling her origin story and references her dazzle power.
Yes.
It's like, well, that's a terrible name for your power, right? but then I'm like, hold on. She's literally a teenager when she came up with this. Like, mm-hmm. that sounds like, you know, a teenage girl in the 70s, you know, 60s, late 60s, or no, 70s maybe, right? Like, I'm trying to think of when she would have been a teenager, right?
Yeah.
I feel like that's kind of that's a name you'd make up for something that a power you discover when you're a teenager, right? Dazzle power. I don't know, you know. but yeah, and then all the really specific ways that it describes how she got her powers and everything. I mean, although there's a thing about how her parents laughed at the shaman doing his dance,
yes.
while which is a little bit like, geez, you know, I mean, that's pretty entitled. Like, I mean, they save you. Like, they're just, I would just be polite, you know? Like, it just seems a little bit, they seem a little bit rude, you know? Or at least maybe, and it didn't help in that, like, it's, you know, if the message at the end there is about treating everybody well, her parents didn't, you know? I suppose maybe that's part of her arc, though, right? Like, if her arc is, under, you know, ultimately, you know, she has a sort of mini personal arc of understanding, because her parents were maybe not the most, you know, kind and thoughtful people. They laugh at the people who help them and, you know, make it possible for them to have a kid. Anyway, sorry, I've gone too far down this.
No. I mean, like I said, he clearly was really into this character. I mean, we talk about it, it's broken up into chapters, and she gets, not only does she get an origin, she then gets a solo chapter where she fights off the shaman with this, again, this sort of taper, Tasmanian devil, evil character.
Yeah, no, it said it is a, that it's a demon with the head of a tapir, tusks of a peccary, which is a pig, feet of a leopard, and tail of a caiman, which they describe as like an alligator in a footnote. Julie Schwartz does. And which honestly, like, that's both ridiculous and kind of cool. I really did enjoy that part, right? Like, it feels like such an oddball thing. But I thought that was super fun.
Yeah. I like, you know, I just, as my own personal predilections, I like that Aquaman got a chapter essentially to himself with Zan. I mean, he gets to sort of use his powers one last time in this book. He gets to use his telepathy and the, you know, the stuff with the wave. That's all great. The stuff with the fossil creatures, the bones coming alive and turning into animals, very kind of Ray Harryhausen in its way. And then the chapter once again with Green Fury, Superman, and Wonder Woman, where they take on these swamp creatures. There's no way that Romeo Tangal was referencing this, because I just don't think that he was busy drawing, but there's an episode of Challenge of the Super Friends where they fight these zombie leaf creatures, and that's exactly what these creatures look like. And it's the closest, it's really the closest the Super Friends cartoon ever got to anything resembling horror, because they make this awful high-pitched kind of sound. Like, they don't talk, they just sort of shriek. And, you know, it's a kid's cartoon.
Well, I mean, it's possible that, I mean, isn't it possible that he was sent a packet of designs or something from the show?
I don't think they're really thinking about this stuff. What do you think of the art of Romeo Tangal and Vince Coletta? We've been bemoaning Coletta as the inker. Like,
yeah, I mean, Coletta, obviously, I'm sure you talked about notoriously, you know, sort of lazy inker Vince Coletta. Although I contend that this was not all inked by Vince Coletta. I think that, there, I can see pages in here, like the beginning of chapter 3, there's kind of a delicacy in the way that, some of it's inked, some of the backgrounds are inked and stuff, or that imagined, thing in the background and stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm not 100% sure, but, like, you know, certainly could be. I think it's fine. I mean, I mostly know Romeo Tangal from inking George Perez
right.
on New Teen Titans.
Right.
I don't know that I've seen stuff before where he was penciling it, but I certainly would like to see what the pencils look like, because, you know, it's definitely serviceable for telling this kind of story. I mean, I think that the little bit simpler look to it is what it needs, because that's, you know, serving the tone of the Super Friends, but I think that it could be a little bit more elegant. It's no Alex Toth, you know.
Well, Roy Moda Frayden, yeah.
Yeah, right, exactly. I mean, I think there's an Alex Toth issue of Super Friends, I believe, like early on in the run.
He drew the Super Friends Treasury edition, which predates the Super Friends series, has an opening 5 pages and some interstitial material by Alex Toth. That's the only time.
Because I just knew that I had a trade at some point.
Yes.
That I just bought because there was an Alex Toth thing in there.
Yep. Yeah. That's what that's from, is from the Treasury. Considering that Alex Toth, you know, would do work for DC every so often, kind of just when I just caught his fancy. It's such a shame that they never got him to do an issue of Super. He did the character sheets for the series.
Yeah. Well,
would have been amazing.
Yeah. But I bet that, like, I mean, that's a job that paid him well.
Yes.
And
yes.
I think that probably there's probably a little bit of like, I'm not going to do the same thing for nothing. You know, I mean, I could, and he was a grumpy guy, you know, he's not an easy guy to deal with by all accounts. Although clearly, I mean, literally one of, you know, the most talented, you know, visual storytellers ever worked in anything.
Oh, absolutely. So, absolutely. You know,
and yeah, I mean, I have, not to digress, but I have, like one of the first pieces of original art I ever bought was, Toth storyboards from a Super Friends episode.
Oh, wow. Oh, so, man.
You know, like, it's, you know, I've always been aware of his, and you see a lot of those, you know, his character designs for animation around, and, and like just his ability to like, you know, there's a lot of people who, not to get into comics process talk here, but there's a lot of people who feel like the only way, you know, the ideal version of comics is when they're pared down to the simplest version. And that's mm-hmm. absolutely what Alex Toth did. I don't necessarily hold to that. Like, I think there's all sorts of ways to, that you can, you know, express stuff and draw people's eye places and stuff. But he was the absolute master of, you know, bringing stuff down into something beautiful and simple.
Oh, and, yeah. And back when we were in, back when I was at the Cubert School and my friends there, we, you know, some of us tried to sort of imitate that approach of like, well, just paring it down to the bare minimum. But the problem that you can't take that as a shortcut. You have to have the bones of the knowledge of the anatomy underneath yeah, that to right, know what yeah. to use.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you know, I think the quote is like, draw the hell out of it and then get rid of everything that you don't need or something yep. like that. So something basically like that. You need everything, you know, working in the first place, and then you pare that down
right.
to the simplest thing. it's there's no look, I think we've all seen the people who've tried to just do it simply without having the yeah. foundations, you know.
The one, at least, you know, every issue I like to I like it if there's at least one panel where we get kind of a nice sort of group shot of them all. And we get that here. It's a little bit. It's on page 13 of where they all break up. They all fan out and we get the three heroes flying and then Batman and Robin yeah. are running and Aquaman's running. That's at least, it's just something of, oh, here's one last shot of them all.
Yeah.
As a big group.
The awkwardness of Green Fury using her breath to fly. I mean, I just feel like we could have just accepted that somehow she could fly. You know, I don't think that part needed to be explained. And this is the continuity cop part that, I mean, I know continuity, but like that goes along with some literalism, you know? And so like right. having to overthink something, like nothing against, you know, ENB, you know, but like, I feel like there's a level of overthinking in, I have to make her, you know, breathe. Like spit out fire in order to fly, just roll with it, you know, because it doesn't look good. Like, and this is a decent, you know, this is a decent little splash. Superman, obviously Green Fury, Superman and Wonder Woman are not well served by that, composition, but
yeah.
they're kind of awkward, flying away.
And they've kept it
sort of with their backs to us and like,
yeah,
it's odd, you know. I would have put the camera up there. I would have had them flying up past us, except for the part where I would have called, ENB and been like, do we have to do this thing with the breath here? Cause like, there's literally no angle where that's not awkward, you know?
Yeah.
But I still would have had them flying up past camera and having the others run away on the ground.
And they've sort of kept that power. I mean, to this day, the fire still has flame breath, but she doesn't use it to fly.
Yeah, that's the awkward part. That's the part that you can't make look good. And and I will say that this is a pretty clear example of it on this splash, this like partial splash on page 13. And it obviously was quick. I think that these, you know, the running poses and stuff look a little swiped. But I'm just going to get into some art minutiae here. This part where Green Fury is, the flame of her breath and then going along the length of her body and then her foot touching the panel. The tangents in here are real hard to get away from. They just are. I'm sorry. So, it felt like it went pretty fast. I don't think that's something that's, maybe Tangal was just like, ugh, I don't know. Maybe some of this fire could just cover up what's, you know, this awkward flying thing.
I got 25 pages to do this month.
I gotta get this thing done.
I gotta get this done.
Good enough.
I'm moving on to New Teen Titans. That's going to make me a little more money.
Yeah.
So that's fine. Yeah. I mean, the one of the things that Tangal did bring to this book, which is a little different from Ramona Freyden, is that he definitely draws Batman a little more Batman-y than what Freyden made him look. And I love Ramona Freyden, but she made him look very cartoony. Here, he's a little more Dark Knight-ish. The cape is more what we come to think of Batman, it's flowing in sort of dramatic ways and things like that. And that's, I think that's just, that's him bringing a slightly more realistic style to it than what Ramona Freyden was known for.
Right.
She's
probably bringing to it something closer to the series. I mean, like,
yes,
he was hardly the Dark Knight in the series.
Yeah. I did find it curious at the very end of the story where the shaman sort of talks about, the will of the powers that the powers of creation, and they're brought by, various beings, and we have fire go Deus, and Superman goes Rao, and Batman goes God.
I know. That's all I know. I was going to just crop that down and, just little Batman yelling out God, and put it on social media or something. But yeah, that really stuck out. That's an odd one.
You would think you would get Wonder Woman saying, Hera or something.
Yeah, like, exactly. Like maybe Batman. Or Zeus or whatever. Yeah. You would think Batman is a very odd choice for that, but it also just kind of feels like, they drew, he was drawn right there. And so, I mean, maybe this is full script. I don't know, but they, probably DC, right? They are very, somberly lined up. Although it does look like, I think that the one thing in here is that he, even if it maybe doesn't play great, modern tastes, he seemed to be really into drawing the native stuff, the giving texture to things, and the bed and the headdresses and all that sort of stuff. It feel like he was at least a little excited about that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. So it said that it's the Supermans are kind of guest stars in their own book for the final issue, which is a little unfortunate. I did enjoy it. You get to the letters page, and I've been mentioning ever since I started the show 4 years ago that I've not been reading ahead. I read these all at the time, but I, in the production of the show, I've not been reading ahead. I've been kind of reading it month to month. That way I'm kind of reading, doing the show as if the book was coming out fresh. Cause that way I'm not, I know what happens in 6 months. So I was sort of fascinated. Like, did they tell anybody? Did they tell the audience that the book was canceled? And we finally get to the letters page here, and someone says, oh, I'd love to see more Green Fury, and or even the villain Green Thumb, who showed up in a previous issue. And we get Bob Rosaka saying, we're sorry to report that you won't be able to look forward to the return of Green Fury or Green Thumb in this magazine, Scott. This is the last issue of Super Friends. And then at the very end, he mentions it again. As we said, this is the last issue of Super Friends, which leaves the International Heroes without even an occasional place to appear. But we have a feeling that E&B will find a way to work them into other stories that he scripts. Right, Nelson? And then finally, in closing, we'd like to thank all of you who have supported Super Friends through its 47 issues. Free Nelson Bridwell, Julia Schwartz, Romeo Tango, Vince Coletta, Bob Oxner, Ramona Freyden, and all the other talented people who worked on this magazine. We hope you had as much fun reading Super Friends as we have had producing it. So at least there's that. And the reason I bring this up is when you were, one of the things that's changed over time about comics is books for the most part, when they get canceled, they tell you ahead of time. They tell the creators ahead of time. So you get a chance to wrap it up. Back when I was a kid, and probably when you were a kid, sometimes they just canceled books. Yes. And they just never came back. You went to the newsstand again, and it just never showed up again. Do you have any like that in your memory? Well, do you have any book that got canceled while you were reading it?
I don't have a specific memory of a book that got canceled when I was reading it, but I also, like, up until I was 13, I only had newsstand to get comics from. I didn't have a comic book store. So like that feeling of not being able to find every issue of something, or comics not being that consistent, was just part of reading comics at the time. I mean, there were so many books where I felt like, I would miss an issue or whatever, just because I couldn't find it on the newsstands. And I would occasionally, go to a bigger city and go to a comic shop, but like, and maybe buy a back issue of something. But like, for a good period of time, it felt like, you know, it was a little bit of a crapshoot going from different, going to different convenience stores and grocery stores and stuff, just looking for things that, you know, that I missed or, you know, I mean, that's a huge sense of, you know, that I have from getting comics before and then by the time I was able to go to a comic shop all the time, it's like I had a, you know, pull list and I was, you know, I was super focused on, you know, on reading everything.
Yeah.
But, I don't remember anything specifically getting canceled. I mean, I remember like World's Finest ending and stuff. I didn't, you know, I read DC and Marvel books, but I think that, but that confusion was a big part of newsstand comics, I think.
Yeah. Cause you're just like, can I just not get this anymore? Like, you don't know, you know, it was just like, okay,
well, and I think this is even more, this is a kind of hyper newsstand comic, right? Like it's intended to be something to reach out to kids who are watching the show. So like it's not, it's a gateway comic and they're not assuming that you're you, Rob, right? Like you actually read every one of them, right? Like they think, well, this is some random, this kid, maybe they'll pick up an issue of this. It'll lead them to pick up Justice League and whatever.
Yep. Yeah, completely. It's funny. There is a mentioning here in the letters page, and this is something we'll cover in the feedback section in a moment, that apparently Super Friends was partly canceled. And obviously the reason it was canceled is because it wasn't selling. No company cancels a book for any other reason other than that. But one of the other reasons was they wanted to clear room on the schedule for Roy Thomas's new book coming in, which was All-Star Squadron. And it's so funny. You mentioned ENB. I mean, compared to Roy Thomas as a continuity cop, ENB is a piker. I mean,
Roy Thomas is the guy for that. That's true. Although I really liked those books when I, you know.
I did too.
All-Star Squadron books and stuff like that. I've always been, I think we've talked about this before, you know, maybe in the Treasury stuff when we were talking about the Treasury edition comics, but like I love that kind of World War II era stuff and the kind of golden age or, you know, like taking the characters from the golden age and all that. And so like All-Star Squadron and all that, it was a big thing for me. I don't know if it was a big thing for lots of kids or not, but definitely something I like. And I continue to I'm pitching some more books, you know, like, pitching potential books to DC now, and it's hard for me not to like try to get through some kind of, you know, 1940s like superhero thing, because like I feel like not only do I love that era of stuff, I'm really knowledgeable about that era of stuff because I'm a huge movie fan and huge, you know, like old movie fan too, but I've not gone back and read that sort of stuff and, you know, as much. And maybe maybe Roy Thomas's crazy continuity would drive me crazy. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, and All-Star Squadron was another book that I bought every issue of the minute it came out. I bought it number one and I read it all the way till number 67 and I missed it when it was gone. But yeah, it's hard to imagine Super Friends selling anything at like a comic shop. Because it's just
nobody goes there for that. I mean, you know, there's a guy in the letters column kind of initially, you know, saying, oh, I never thought I'd read a Super Friends comic and be compelled by it, but he's into the international heroes. Although he says that that it was a special pleasure since he was of Irish descent to see Jack-O-Lantern, but his leprechaun sidekick was a drag.
That I agree with. Those stories are rough. Character's fine, but those stories were really, really rough. So, all right, quick, as we're wrapping up here, what did you think of the other issues that you took, that you looked at, the ones with Green Fury?
I mean, I think the interesting thing was just that he was clearly, you know, stealthily building up his kind of, you know, like, you know, getting in his characters, you know, trying to build a little mythology for this whole thing that was independent of the show. And, you know, and it was, you know, and I read issues with other, you know, other international heroes and stuff. And, that's the interesting part, I think, mostly for me, just that it's, you know, that this was an opportunity for him to kind of like try to express this creative idea that he clearly had and want to get out there.
Absolutely. So, well, that's Super Friends, everybody. That's all 47 issues of the series. It's been a long time coming, but we finally got here. So, Gabriel, thank you once again for coming by. I have to tell you that this is your fifth appearance on a show of mine. You have been on
fifth one. Is it really?
You've done Pod Dylan,
yeah.
Fade Out, Citizen Kane Minute, Treasury Cast, and now For All Mankind.
Oh, you're right. So, yeah, it's the fifth. I was thinking it was the fourth. Right.
No, and as we have established from other listeners over the years, that anyone who does five of my solo shows gets an award. Now, it's been named the Robbie. I didn't name it that. That has been sort of just vox populi kind of thing. I know that, you know, you've done a lot of great things in your career. You've done a lot of great comic books, a lot of great storyboard work. I got to see your name in a movie this summer on the credits, which was just so exciting. I get to point to my friends and be like, hey, that's the guy I know. But I think it's obvious that you getting a Robbie is your greatest achievement in your career. You don't have to acknowledge it. We just know that that's the.
No, honestly, I'm touched for one thing. I'm excited about it. I'm excited to pretend to put it on the shelf.
Fantastic. Well, okay. Well, you wrap up here. Please tell everybody what you're working on because you have something in the hopper that is related to the Super Friends.
Yeah, I have in the current series of Batman Brave and the Bold that DC's putting out now, like it's a kind of a book with kind of multiple series in chapters and I'm doing a three-part Aquaman serial.
Yeah.
Honestly, probably not unlike a lot of people my age. My interest in Aquaman comes from Super Friends, right? Particularly from the episode where he got stuck, back in time. And, do you remember this? That's literally something like a moment I remember as a kid. Where he buries the communicator.
The
and then they, and then they dig it up in the present. And I remember being, you know, I'm five or whatever, four and going, this is brilliant. You know, that really struck me as like for, you know, there's so much. And I've gone back and watched some Super Friends at times and maybe the storytelling isn't the greatest in a lot of it. But that was a moment where I was just like, yeah, this is, you know, like I didn't know quite what it meant, but like there's more to this. There's a kind of big epic story being told here. And so I've always had a sort of, you know, I've always had a, you know, I've liked Aquaman, but Aquaman's also kind of a challenge to write, you know, like, it's not the easy slam dunk of a Batman story or whatever, you know? Mm-hmm. But also I like fish. So, just to draw and stuff. I don't even eat fish, it's like a three-part, Aquaman story. Something is drawing fish down into this fissure in, deep in the ocean and, you know, killing and paralyzing them. And the apes of Gorilla City have something to do with it.
Oh,
the creepy looking, alien dominators that some people may remember from the 80s invasion.
Remember them series, too. Yeah. Right? The big pointy teeth.
Yes. So like it's, you know, all this stuff fits and works together, but I like fitting together a couple of slightly unexpected characters and tones into a story that's at heart about, people believing, conspiracies and making a bad decision. Not Aquaman. He's there to figure it out.
Excellent. Well, I'm really looking forward to that. That's my favorite character and I love your work. And so those two things together, that's like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich kind of thing. So, I'm really looking forward to that. And I'm sure anyone listening to this is a fan of Aquaman like I am, is going to look forward to it as well. So again,
and look, if you're not a fan of Aquaman, I think you also might like it because I'm just telling a fun little story.
Absolutely. Yes. I mean, again, they got the Gorilla City and the Dominators. What else do you want? I mean, yeah. Come on, everybody. Well, when does the first issue of that come out?
I believe it is next month in November.
Okay.
It's in issue 6, I believe.
All right. I'm looking forward to it. Well, again, Gabriel, thank you once again. It's always a pleasure to talk to you and have you on one of my shows. Again, we talk about a lot of different stuff, man. We've talked about
I know,
Golden Age comics and Super Friends and Citizen Kane and Bob Dylan songs. We're Renaissance men. So
if you ever come up with another podcast, you know, just let me know.
I will absolutely let you know. Well, again, thank you so much. And everybody, thank you for listening. Stay tuned. I'm going to run some commercial announcements. And when I come back, I'm going to do some listener feedback.
Hey everyone, my name is Michael Bailey, and I like Superman. Like, a lot. Like, he's my favorite character. I like him so much that I have podcasted about the Man of Steel more than any other character. Back in 2017, I started a show called It All Comes Back to Superman, to serve as the monthly reaffirmation of my Kryptonian faith. Well, the monthly thing hasn't worked out, but I'm hoping to change that in 2020. This year, there will be at least one episode a month of the show, and most of those will be part of a series I'm calling Superman is for Everybody. Superman is for Everybody springs from my desire to talk to people that have channeled their love and affection for the character into other avenues, like cosplay, or podcasting, or academia. New episodes will drop in the first or second week of the month, with special episodes popping up at random, because that's how I roll, apparently. It All Comes Back to Superman as part of the Fortress of Baileytube Podcasting Network, which can be found at www.fortressofbaileytube.com. The show is available through Apple Podcasts, the Google Play Store, and it's even on Spotify. It All Comes Back to Superman. Because really, it does. Give me a few minutes and I'll make the connection. Why are you walking away? I'm not done talking to you.
It's heavy! I found the way to the gold!
Pitfall by Activision?
Quick, to the Atari video computer system! Here, show us!
First, climb down the underground passage. Oh, yeah. Leap over scorpions.
Set!
Swing over the swamp.
Crocodile!
There.
The gold!
Did I mention the targets?
Pitfall, a jungle adventure game designed by David Crane from Activision.
And it's time for listener feedback, and these are the comments we got on For All Mankind, episode 46, with my guest, Noah Tarnow. First up is Dr. Chris Lewis, who says, great episode, guys. The main story sounds ... convoluted, so thank goodness for the Seraph backup to elevate the issue one last time. Can't wait for the final episode, where Wonder Dog will be at last be revealed as the big bad who's been orchestrating the events of 46 issues for his own nefarious ends. Sorry to disappoint you, Chris. Glenn Robinson says, Hammond Dry sure sounds like a play on ham on rye. Not sure why this would make any sense, though. Maybe I'm reaching too, Rob. As we'll see, Clint, you were not the only person to come to this conclusion, so I don't think it's a reach. Rob McCarthy says, as for the Time Trapper, he's always a different person in Legion, right? He may be a different person here, too. More, he's a space-time guy. He can make the Super Friends part of Earth One or not. As editors see fit, I mean, who's sure Legion is Earth One? I think they made Robin a badass just to make up for how badly he was treated in the cartoon. Robin gets disrespected a lot. A Bullet Man foe shows up in the Joker solo book. Robin does not. Finally, Rob, sell Action Comics before killing Hitler. You change World War II before American involvement, you might turn superheroes into a very short-lived fad. I had not thought of that, Rob. Thank you. Ado Boznar chimes in. Yeah, I was going to say that killing Hitler would change the timeline to possibly make all those comic books worthless somehow. Nonetheless, I think killing Hitler is still the right answer. Thank you, Ado. I think we all can agree killing Hitler is the right answer. Captain Entropy continues on, though. Sure, but practically, there's a lot more to killing Hitler than buying Action Comics number one. To do, one, go to newsstand. Two, plan an assassination of a head of state in a rapidly militarizing dictatorship where I don't even speak the language. I mean, I have the utmost faith in Rob, but I'd want him to have a support team on this one, you know? And then he follows up with, of course, the new stand will need 1938 money. So I guess it's a two-step process. Yeah, I hadn't, you know, and really thought all that through. It was just really focusing on the comics and killing Hitler. Brian Chufo says, I used to think there were decades between where Green Flame and Ice Maiden first appeared in the Super Friends and when they came back in the pages of Justice League. Was it really only 10 years ago that we were trying to deal with the new 52? Time moves so slowly when you're a teenager. But now we have a Fire and Ice and Smallville miniseries. The reach of E. Nelson Bridwell and his kids comic is impressive. Indeed, Brian. Dr. Ann says, I also thought the ham on rye was a pun, though I don't know if it's funny. It's not. Love the Sarah story. And yes, Oxter knew how to draw beautiful women. He inked Carmen Infantino on Supergirl. It definitely made those women easy on the eyes, especially the everyday non-superhero ones. His Supergirl was attractive. His Linda Danvers, sultry, swoony, gorgeous. I knew about Masada because of the miniseries. It was there that I learned who Peter O'Toole was. I recall it was on in the spring and I was allowed to stay up late to watch it. Did this issue predate that show, building on it, entering into the public mind? I looked that up, Ange. I did not watch the Masada miniseries, but it aired on television in April 1981, which is the exact same time that this issue, number 46, was out. So E. Nelson Bridwell really, well, actually, I should credit Bob Oxner, really threaded that needle and got it out at almost exactly the right time. So maybe, yeah, it was a little more on kids' minds because they could see it on television, or at the very least, maybe read the comic first, then saw the miniseries and went, oh, okay, that's what we're talking about. Super Captain says, another fantastic episode. I recall the Seraph story from this issue, but not the main one. Seraph fascinated me by linking to a couple of Bible stories from Sunday school back in the day. I knew about Samson and Moses, but this may have been where I learned about the mantle of Elijah and the ring of Solomon. Of course, Solomon was also the S in Shazam, which confused me for a bit since Solomon was not a god of any kind. But I digress. Aquaman's line in this story is so funny to me. Well, Sinestro wanted to come, so I brought him with me. I can just hear Sinestro pleading with Aquaman. Gee, Aquaman, can I come too? Can I? And regarding his potential change of heart in this issue, Sinestro has occasionally found himself on the side of the good guys, but I don't think he ever had a complete babyface turn since he got his yellow ring. Glad to hear you will be doing a couple of extra episodes. I have really enjoyed the podcast, and I have no clue what Ham and Rye is supposed to be a play on, but Ham on Rye sounds as good as anything. Edo Boznar comes back and says, as expected, my hopes for a showdown between the Hornheads and this issue were dashed. It was a real missed opportunity. Oh, well. Otherwise, I'm with everyone else in the comments about Ham on Rye, although if that is the case, I don't really get the joke either. And finally, I agree with you both that the Seraph story is really the highlight of this issue, and not just because of the very fetching Rivka. However, I also agree that the story's content, i.e. a callback to the Roman siege of Masada, it seems a bit heavy for a Super Friends comic. I've definitely been more suited for one of the more adult titles like Action Comics. Lizanne Oswald says, as for the art, I like it, but Ramona was great too. Well, when I think of Romeo, I think of G.I. Joe, since Larry Hama did use his name for Torpedo, a Navy SEAL in the toy line and comic. I did not know that. The next is the last issue. Wow. Well, it was fun to hear while it lasted. Look forward to what you record next, Rob. Probably a Legion of Superheroes podcast. Yeah, probably. Captain Entropy says that where can we find more information about the explicit Jewish content and stories all about these heroes and so much more? That's right. One of my favorite podcasts. Funny, they don't look Jewish. Rob, you got to push Henry and Rabbi Brandon's work more. It's outstanding. Noah would love it. I mean, I know you mentioned it, but give the people the names so they can look it up, please. Remember, you said you would use your powers for good. Yeah, I apologize, everybody. I just sort of blanked. I know the name of the show, but for some reason in the moment, I just blanked on me what the name of it was. I didn't want to get it wrong. And for some reason, I don't know why I couldn't just pause for a moment and look it up and then take that pause out. Podcasters, you feel like you want to do it kind of live, even though you know you can edit it. But anyway, yes, the name of the show is Funny They Don't Look Jewish. It's a great show, and especially the episode where they did a whole deep dive into the Seraph stories is really fun. But you know, I love Henry Bernstein. He's been on Pod Dylan a bunch of times, and he's on Treasury Cast. He's been on Mountain Comics. He's been on a bunch of my shows. So yeah, go check that show out, everybody. Isamu Hideki Yukinori says, a fun show, Uncle Rob and Uncle Noah. I always enjoy how you spotlight the fun in these goofy stories, as well as the high acclaim for Seraph. And yes, the world beater had taken a number of pages to defeat in issue 3, but Superman used the same method of defeating him here in issue 46. So that worked fine for me. It's just like how all the Super Friends shorts featuring Bizarro had the villain defeated with blue kryptonite. And the final issue is almost upon us. A fine time as any to pull up a discovery I made a few years ago while going through my dad's old comic book news magazines from the Comic Times Media Showcase issue number 5, March of 1981. There's a section here that the two titles axed. Both Mystery in Space and Super Friends have been canceled. The cancellations were not related, according to Paul Levitz, DC's manager of business affairs. Mystery in Space received a very poor newsstand response, and its direct sales were mediocre, Levitz explains. Super Friends was canceled to make room for Thomas's new titles. Ouch. Super Friends was canceled despite a guaranteed weekly media tie-in with the Saturday morning cartoon show. When asked for an opinion as to why the television show did not help sales of the comic book, Levitz replied, "We've never found that a Saturday morning show had any effect on comic book sales." Levitz added that DC will be doing Super Friends special with General Foods later this year. The last issue of Super Friends to appear will be number 47. So there you go. As I mentioned earlier, obviously, if Super Friends had been selling, they would have found room to add Roy Thomas's new titles, which were All-Star Squadron and Arrak, Son of Thunder, and keep Super Friends. But obviously sales were not really worth keeping the book on. And so there you go. So I refuse to blame Roy Thomas and All-Star Squadron for the demise of Super Friends, because I, as I said, I loved All-Star Squadron. So, you know, that book was fantastic. I never missed an issue, as I mentioned earlier. But thank you so much, Easton Move, for finding that that little piece of comics ephemera. That's just absolutely fantastic. Captain Entropy returns once again to say, "I've commented on other comments, and now I have to make sure you know, Rob and Noah, that this was another great episode. I always enjoyed hearing about the kooky main plot, especially the Sinestro bit, and the awesome, as always, Seraph backup. I always enjoyed the rundown on Noah's work, but there's nothing quizzical about that." Chris Franklin from our very network says, "Another fun show. Gents, if anything, Sinestro got nastier to the point that the Green Lantern Corps executed him in the final issue of Hal's original numbering. Maybe he felt embarrassed about his public moment of weakness here and had thought he had something to prove. Agree on all points on the Seraph story. As the husband of a Barbie collector, Oxner's women seem to evoke that mid-century style seen on early Barbie toys. The upturned noses, the long legs, etc. But man, they are fetching. Didn't Oxner design Supergirl's famous hot pants outfit, Dr. Ange? Either way, he likes the shorty shorts. Now, I can't not see a Seraph figure in the Warlord line. The current Motu Origins toy line has included all the characters in the short-lived Sunman line of figures that Olmec Toys made in the 80s. Maybe, just maybe, someone could convince them to re-release the Warlord figures in that line and add a Seraph? One can dream. Either way, it's nice to hear that the Seraph stories are helping Noah reconnect with his faith and culture. Powerful stuff indeed." Yeah, man, I love it when Chris talks toys. I've been saying it over and over. Chris, you got to do a toy show for the network. It just would be so much fun to listen to. Sean M. Myers, of course, also from our network, says, "Welcome to the podcast. Now, it was great hearing you talk about your memories and your faith. My love of the Global Guardians knows no borders, and I think that they're all great here. As many have said, it's a shame that there wasn't more done to develop them into their own title. With more heroes, another issue, and a better conclusion, this storyline would have been a great final arc for the Super Friends series, at least number 50. Regarding the chapter title, Ham and Dry, there is a British phrase, home and dry, which means to have successfully finished something. The only reason I know that is because it's the name of the Pet Shop Boys, not because I heard Martin Gray say it in the Batman Family Reunion. Maybe they used this since Hector was the only villain to help the heroes capture the main bad guy." And then Martin Gray chimes in, "Thanks for another top show. This was a typically fun issue. Excellent Super Friends fun and our final visit to the Seraph. Godiva did have a good run at Dan Jurgens' new 52 JLU book. It's a shame this version hasn't been seen since DC Rebirth kicked in. I was interested to hear Noah's thoughts on the Seraph story and Jewish creators in comics, but I'd never heard of the X-Men as a metaphor for the Jewish people hiding in plain sight, only the tacked on civil rights business. Only one more issue, Rob." Actually, he writes, "One more issue, sob, not Rob. Sorry about that. I need glasses." Yeah, well, you know, now we're down to zero, sort of. We'll talk about that in a moment. Brett Young returns for one final comment, giving us yet another installment of his ongoing saga of Aquaman Weed Dealer. He says, "Great show, Rob and Noah. Noah, may I first say, what you were you thinking, tearing the covers off your comics? That's this network's version of a Saw movie. Oh, the humanity. Don't tell that story at the bat mitzvah. Overall, I really like the team up. Superman and Olympian were a good team in the sense that Olympian stood there with an animal on his head and watched Superman do stuff. Supes basically could have accomplished the same goals if he was paired with the chairman of the Elk Lodge. The Wild Huntsman drew the short straw and got stuck with Womack and Womack. But at least Jaina helped out in the fight by turning into a housefly. I think the Time Trapper keeps changing the timeline in an attempt to forget all the times he's gotten his lunch handed to him by Peters and Lee. Finally," that one, deep cut. "Finally, it was fun watching Robin and Rising Sun beat the crap out of a bunch of January Sixers. Kick him one more time, Robin. Aquaman finally gets an appearance. Quote, okay, now we're all back together as the bad guys at the bad guy's castle. At least it's not in the shape of his head like some people we know. Well, nobody else brought their villain. I'm the only one who brought their villain. Great. I knew I should have called Superman to see if anyone else was bringing theirs. Now everyone is looking at me. Okay, just play it off by saying another something cool. Ahem. Sinestro wanted to come along, so we brought him. God, that sounded so lame. What was I thinking? I'll have to stand by Sinestro the whole battle. I won't get to punch anyone. Face it, Arthur. You've only brought him because you said he liked your perm. It's just so hard to get a compliment out of the other super friends. They save it all for the Exorian. He just an herb over here. Just the word. Wait, the fight's over? That's it? Mish just pointed at him. What was the point of this all coming here? That's it. I'm leaving Sinestro in this guy's half closet and calling my weed guy. Finally, let me say the Seraph story was great. Judging by the last panel, it looks like our hero definitely gets a happy ending. I'm really going to miss those comments, Brent. Thanks, everybody, for all those comments. Absolutely such a delight to hear from you all. And regarding the Hammond Drive thing, I got that it was a, like, maybe I didn't express this in the moment on the show with Noah. I got that it was, like, it was a pun on Hammond Rye, but that had nothing to do with the story. And that's what threw me off. It was like, I get the pun, but the pun had no connection to anything in the story, which is why I kept thinking, was there some other deeper meaning? But of course, there probably wasn't. I was just really, really, really overthinking it. So that's it, everybody. That is our 47 issues of Super Friends. We're finally here. Big, big thanks to Gabriel Hardman for coming by. It's always such a delight getting him on one of my shows. And I've had the wonderful opportunity to have him five different times across five shows. It's just absolutely fantastic. I'm a big fan of his work. I'm really looking forward to the Aquaman three-parter. And it was just so cool to talk about this final issue of Super Friends with him. So it was just great. So of course you can find the show on Twitter at For All Mankind SF. You can find all the back episodes on our website, FineWaterPodcast.com. You can subscribe to the show on any podcatcher of your choice. And if you want to support the Fine Water Podcast Network, just go to patreon.com/FW Podcast. And there you can unlock various rewards, one of which is to be name checked on show of your choice. So big salute to Chuck Dill, Stanford M. Brown, and Donald McWaters, plus Gord Tolton and Davies Gutierrez for their support of the Fine Water Podcast Network. So thanks for listening to For All Mankind. So what are we doing now? We will be back next month with one of our fellow network all-stars. That's all I'll say. I'm going to reveal exactly what we'll be talking about because that would give it away. Is that a hint? Maybe. I'll have to come back next month to find out. Anyway, see you all later. Bye.
An FW TV podcast.